So, Bev Malone, our self-esteem engineer, is in the studio, ready to take your calls, not taking SMSs. So please call us directly on 0861 24 24 36. Good morning, Miss Malone.
Good morning, Miss Sabrini.
So how has your week been? You say you're not feeling 100%.
This is like what happens in Washington stays in YouTube, right? What happens off air goes on air. Yes, I had a bit of food poisoning last night.
So awful.
I don't feel like I'm ready to run the comrades.
I think it should be called food punishing.
Food punishing. Food punishment is when you have a gluttonous experience of food you enjoy and you feel sick afterwards. Food poisoning is where you take in food that is toxic
that you think
and
should be okay.
disposed of, and then you suddenly realize that something is not okay in the world anymore, and then it remains that way for hours.
Oh no, I'm so sorry.
So
well, thank
I,
you for coming in, Bev. I know when you're not feeling well to have to come.
Oh. Life carries on. You know, I didn't die over it. We carry on. We carry on. Lots of Proby Flora.
Oh yeah, lots of
and lots of water and lots of prayer, and it will pass.
Oh well, hope you feel better, Bev. So listen, I've got a birthday that someone's just slipped me.
Good.
The rest hopefully people will call on 0861 24 24 36. The 13th of September.
Okay.
1967.
13th of September, 1967.
Yeah.
All right. Do we know this person? Do you know this person?
No.
Oh, okay. So the 13th of September, 1967.
Well, I don't know this person
14,
well. They
right?
gave me a date.
Ah, okay. Yeah. All right. So, well, we're looking at somebody who wants to be followed around and listened to. That's definitely it. Very analytical, creative mind and likes to be listened to and followed, right? It doesn't like to be second-guessed. This is not a person who's necessarily interested in your debate. Perhaps open to it, but not necessarily interested in it. So we have somebody who just has their own social drama and their own way about them, and very unusual, probably loves the stage, loves to be listened to and not necessarily worshipped, but followed and demands respect, unrealistically expectant of the world, unrealistically expectant. And this is obviously in the lower potential I'm talking about, but this is where this person can risk being, to go into this emotional drama of, I can't believe this is happening to me, and life is so hard, and nothing goes right for me, and it's all that emotional manipulation. I can't believe you do that. And, you know, we can diverge because we don't have a ton of SMSs with the lines down. It's a great time to just diverge and go off on tangents and talk about stuff. And for people who do that, and you know if you do that, think about it. If you're the kind of person who is saying, I can't believe you do that, if you've said that in the last month to anyone or the last few days or whatever, I need you to think about it, because that comes from a place that is manipulative. It's not truth. You can't not believe someone has done that. If somebody has done that, somebody's done it. You can't not believe it. I might not
believe.
Maybe
they're expressing a sense of disappointment.
No, what I'm saying is when you see something happening in front of you, you have to believe it. Because it just happened in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
I may have a little debate about whether or not anyone's really landed on the moon, because there's so much you can do in Universal Studios, and there's just so much that we're assuming happened and is true. There's a leap of faith I'm taking that someone has gone to the moon and that they've played golf up there and they've left a flag. And, you know, of course, we need a flag on the moon. So what? So there are people who come from distant galaxies and go past the moon and go,
oh,
look, America was there.
Exactly. Well done, America.
Where'd they come from? That little planet. This is the furthest they got there. Moon? We've just come from 200 leagues of light years. They traveled to the moon, then put a flag. Anyway, you know, just a thought. But with that, we might say I can suspend my disbelief or my belief and say I'm not certain. But when something happens in front of you, you have a choice to work with it or not. But you can't not believe it. It just happened. So to say to someone, I don't believe you do that, is trying to invoke in them that they have done something wrong. Instead of being honest and saying, that was hurtful or disappointing for me. I would so have preferred if you'd done it this way. That's truth. But it's not truth to say I don't believe you did that, because you can't not believe it. They did it in front of you. And it's not truth to try and manipulate someone into feeling something. That's passive aggression. I want you to feel bad so you get on your knees and beg me to touch you with my golden scepter. That's what you're saying. But you don't have the guts to say, that felt vulnerable. That felt hurtful. That felt disappointing. That's the truth. So the next time you hear that coming out of your mouth, try add on to it, I don't believe that you just did that. Actually, what can I say? I do believe it, but I'm so surprised by it because it was very hurtful for me. That's truth. And then eventually you might get to the point where you can just look straight at that and go, what's the sadness inside? What just came up? What just hurt? That was disappointing. I was hoping it would go differently. That was hurtful. I don't like being spoken to like that. It doesn't make me feel comfortable. And there's a whole lot of different things we can do. But with this person, this 13th of September person, 1967, and with anyone else out there who does that, if anybody ever says that to me, I don't believe you did that, I say, well, do you need to have a sanity check? I just did it in front of you. I'm not perfect. If it was disappointing, let's talk about it. I will endeavor to be better. I will endeavor to meet more of your needs, communicate your need. But don't try and manipulate me. I don't do manipulation. Where I feel manipulated, if I cannot reason with the person and I cannot bring them to a place where we can converse and sort things out, I shut them off. I have to protect myself. This is my world. And if I cannot work with people who are trying to manipulate and bring thunderclouds into my world. It doesn't always have to be rainbows and ponies, but it does have to be real. And so let's be real with each other. Fantastic. Welcome into my world. You get to stay. Mm. But if I show you where you're not being real and you insist on still not being real, I'm sorry, but there's a one-way ticket out of my world. And that's how everyone should be. Holding people close to you who manipulate you, who are hurtful towards you, and you address those needs not being met, and you try and find resolution, and they still continue to be hurtful and manipulative, it is you abusing you. If you allow them to stay, when you give somebody an opportunity to improve and an opportunity to refine, and they choose not to take it to stay in your world, they're giving you a clear message. They don't think the relationship is worth the effort and work it takes for them to meet your needs. Now, if you choose to keep them in your life, bear in mind you can no longer blame them. Now it is you abusing you. And that's a very important thing. Don't come to me with drama about how hard your life is, because when we start to nitpick through your life, are we going to find a whole lot of relationships in which you've never addressed your needs? Are we going to find a whole lot of places where you give people permission to speak down to you? Are we going to find a whole lot of places where you have not stepped forward and said, I deserve better?
Bev, we've spoken about this before, but I think that the first step is identifying what your needs are, because maybe people are having problems with communicating a need because actually they don't know what their needs are. They don't know what their expectations are. It's there. It's there somewhere deep inside. They know that if they're not getting it, it hurts. And it's disappointing and it's all of those things. But it's actually identifying. It's sitting down and thinking about what are my needs? What are my expectations? What is going to fulfill me? What is not going to fulfill me? Because once you're very clear on those needs, then when they aren't met, you can be more specific about it as well.
I agree with you. When you know yourself intimately, it is very easy to say, I don't like runny eggs. Mm. Please take that away from me. Mm. Please make certain the eggs aren't runny.
Yeah.
But it's amazing that on a culinary level,
We're so,
so
clear.
Clever. We go into a restaurant. What would you like to eat? I would like the salad. I'd like the dressing on the side. I don't want it made with sugar. I want this. I want that. Mm. Can I have a skinny latte or this latte or that latte? Put the espresso on the side. It's a, oh, we're so clever. We're so intuitive in line. We're so connected to ourselves when it comes to putting food in our mouth. But when it comes to filling our emotional bowl, we're clueless. Because of our belief structure. Because somewhere along the line, when we said, that makes me sad, which children are so open to do, they cry. It makes them sad. They cry. Someone said to them, stop crying.
Ugh.
and they believed that their crying was not justified. And so the next time that thing hurt, instead of crying, they swallowed it. You cannot outrun your emotion. Let's talk about this for a bit, because this is such a big thing that people struggle with all the time. You cannot outrun unresolved emotional pain. You cannot outrun it. You will have a body that packs on fat to protect itself, that tries to keep itself safe and from harm. And it has this extra weight to pad you from pain, because there's so much pain inside. Many times this happens. Many times. There are clinical conditions that render people in that position that it has nothing to do with gluttony. There's has nothing to do with emotional ill health. When that does happen, and it is connected, it is because there's unresolved emotion inside that you are being protected from the world by your body holding on to things to protect you. And it holds you back. But people say, no, I'm going to take care of this. I'm going to lose it. And they'll fight and they'll gym and they'll work out and they'll eat right and they'll do this and do that. And guess what? They'll beat up their body until it's in a chiseled physique improvement and etc., etc. And guess what happens? Slowly, surely, everything they lost finds them. And they're like, I can't believe I'm back here again. And you want to know why it is? Because you cannot outrun unresolved emotion. You will always tend to the lowest place of your deepest unresolved emotion. And you will be stuck there. You will be held there. And that emotion is creative energy. And so it will turn into things. If you pour it into art, you will create the deepest art. If you pour it into writing, you will create the most unbelievable writing. And if you pour it into your body, it has to create something. And unfortunately, inside the body, unresolved emotion is heavy and it creates havoc. That's what it creates. Mm-hmm. It distorts programming. It creates illness and disease. And it works with the body to hold it back because it wants to be released. And so it'll go to the heart and it'll say, can you release me? Can you release me? And you'll have heart problems. And it'll go to the pancreas and it'll, can you release me? I just want to get out of this body. Emotion and pain is unresolved creative energy that is heavy if you keep it inside. And it has to create, so it'll create havoc. We have to let it out. And so we come up with a flu, or we come up with chest pain, or we come up with a lump, or we come up with this, that, and the other, and we think our body's becoming defective. But actually, the more you read, the more you learn, the more you understand the body-mind-soul connection, the more you can make peace with the fact that it is your body speaking to you and saying, there's something trapped here. Can you help me release it? And many people who are healers suffer the most horrific illnesses, because they process so much pain for people that they cannot always release. Mm. And they land up getting ill from other people's pain. It has to be released. And someone will say to me, oh, nonsense, come on. Maybe just bashing your knee is just bashing your knee. Maybe just getting cancer is just getting cancer. And I'll say, okay, that's the world you're comfortable to live in. I'm fine with that. I have no judgment. But then you be equally as non-judgmental and allow me to have my perhaps illusion of what makes more sense to me that says I will continue to let go of my repressed emotion. I will continue to take the hurt and traumas that I've held on to and that are inside of me and release them. Because I don't know about you, but I feel better when it's released. I feel lighter. I feel more enabled. I feel more capable. So if I'm feeling that way when I'm releasing stored energy, stored pain, stored hurt, if I'm feeling it's possible others will also. So I'll stay on this side of the hypothesis. You're welcome to stay on your side of the hypothesis. And let's see who's right 100 years from now. Let's see. It doesn't matter to me. But we have to work with hypothesis that serves us. I always love to say to people, that's your theory? Fantastic. How's that working for you? My son was telling me something the other day, Nikki, and I said to him, well, that's interesting. How's it working for you? He said, well, it's not really. And I said to him, okay, well, now you're in an amazingly powerful position, my boy. Amazingly powerful. You get to choose what you do going forward. You're not a victim of it. You're not a victim of anything. You get to choose how you finish the project. You get to choose whether you run the race or not. You get to choose at your age these kind of things. and some deeper things. Depends on what we're going through and what week it is.
Let's take a break. After the break, let's look at how to release those unresolved emotions and energies. Self-esteem engineer Bev Malun is in the studio. Unfortunately, if you're sending in your birth date via SMS, our SMS line is down. So if you want Bev to do numeric profiling on your birth date, she has a look. She looks at the numbers. She gives you a great sense of self and an even greater sense of what it is you need to be working on in order to reach your full potential. Then you're going to have to call directly into the studio using the number 0861 24
24 36. Radio finally worth listening to.
FM. Welcome back in your element, Nikki Zeberini. We have Bev Malun in the studio taking your calls on 0861 24 24 36. We're going to press pause. We're going to come back to releasing those unresolved emotions because I think it's so important. But we do have Barbara on the line. Hi, good morning, Barbara.
Good morning.
Please go ahead, Barbara. Bev's listening.
I've got my birthday for you. It's the 10th of January, 1964.
Thanks, Barbara. Do you have any specific questions that you want to look at?
You know, I've just been listening intensely to what you were saying, and I just there is just so much that resonates with me, and especially about repressed emotions. I've had quite a bit of that lately.
You tend towards feeling like a victim, yes?
And I hate that feeling. I just wanted to get out of it.
Okay. So grab a tissue box, my dear, and I'm going to give you perhaps a few insights that may have value. Okay.
Wonderful. Thank
you. You're going to listen on the radio, right, Barbara. Thank you so much for calling. Okay, you've got Barbara's date there.
Okay. Yeah. Sometimes I feel like the bearer of that I should be sponsored by one of those tissue companies. Hey? I mean, honestly, I'd like to think I'm bringing
joy and
insight and value.
But tears can be a very good thing.
Of course it is. I'm just kidding. But tears are phenomenal. When someone's crying, I know they're changing. Mm. They're arguing with me, I know they're listening and processing. Mm. And if they're crying, I know they're releasing emotions. So it'll cause less havoc inside.
Yeah.
Okay. So, Barbara tends towards feeling like a victim. It's her work. It's your work, Barbara. It's right there, clear as daylight for me. There's a huge amount of self-esteem work that is her correctional work that she chose for this lifetime. So in each person's life, we have the belief that there's a correctional, well, it's not just one thing, plethora, shall we say, of work to do on refining the character, the personality, the interaction with humanity, the behavior. So we look at somebody like an Amy Winehouse, and obviously I'm not an angel and I'm not God, so I don't know exactly what the plan was, but if we had to look at it in an objective way, would we say that it was her role, and I've looked at her numbers, make no mistake, I can see exactly what her correctional work looks like. It was supposed to be, was self-discipline. So now how better self-discipline, self-management, and doing things in a way that honored and served her and community, because she had a very powerful potential, right? So when we look at how she manifested that, obviously she manifests a life in which she would have huge outreach so that she can work that. Obviously she manifests a life in which she can touch lives. Obviously she has a life in which she could be disciplined or undisciplined. And in every aspect of what her work could have been, she failed. This poor girl, she failed. I still think she has one of the most amazing voices of the 21st century, but she failed. And how heartbreaking. How heartbreaking that was just, she's going to come back. She will have to do that. She didn't get that right. She got all the opportunities to do that work, but she didn't do the work. So Barbara, what I'm saying to you is if you look around at your life, all the things in it are the opportunities you actually asked for, wished for, manifested before coming here to work on your self-esteem, believing in yourself, even though things are hard and relationships are hard, giving yourself an opportunity, even though it seems like it's insurmountable, and to stay out of being the victim and to find a way through it. Now, there are times when we are victimized. There's no question. There are times when we go through things that are painful and we are victimized. Okay. In the moment. But if you choose to remain a victim when that event is concluded, then you keep giving power to the perpetrators of that experience to keep you as a victim. So, for example, when my son and I were beaten up in that hijacking when he was 8 months old, so this was January 2001, we were victimized. There is no question. We cannot get any way around that. Mm-hmm. In the moment, in the couple of minutes that that took place, we were victimized. The fact that we chose, or I chose initially and he called up and chose later, the fact that I chose not to remain a victim and not to tend towards bitterness and broken-spiritedness and etc., and to do whatever it took to regroup, to reconstitute, to redefine, to rebuild myself, means that in the moment I was victimized, but I did not remain a victim.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a very powerful thing for people to get right, and it takes a lot of work, obviously. This didn't happen by accident. When it comes to you, Barbara, what I'm saying to you is you have such a capacity for nurturing, and she is. She's a deep nurturer. Now, the catch with that is that when you nurture without the right boundaries, when you nurture with too much expectation, when you nurture hoping for things but you haven't articulated your needs, it's like running at a brick wall and expecting not to get scratched or hurt or have any pain afterwards. It's not going to happen. It will happen that way every time. And so when we look at what kind of work you can start to do moving forward, the first thing is, it's not going to harm you to recognize and own the fact that you tend towards feeling the world's against you. Constantly. That's her flow. The world's against me. Mm-hmm. It won't work.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps it might have more value to look at the situations that are challenging you and see that there's a role you also play in it, and you can change the story. You don't have to believe that people are harmful or hurtful or cruel. Some people make mistakes. Some people are deliberately cruel, to be honest. I wish they weren't, but some are. But we can change a story and we can say, I didn't articulate my need there. And so they didn't have a chance to meet my need. Mm. There wasn't an opportunity for this situation not to be thwarted. There is roles that we can take responsibility for. And the good news about that is that then you're not a victim. Then you have, like I was saying to my son, then you have power. If you can decide that part of that was your responsibility, then you're empowered. You're not disempowered. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So when we're looking at that, Barbara, that's what I'm encouraging you to do, is look very closely at where you're giving too much power away and not owning enough of it, not making choices enough, not acknowledging that life can be hard, but whatever it is that is in your life, you are 100% equipped to handle or outsource to the correct people for support to handle. But even being able to outsource is part of your coping mechanism. We don't get anything given to us that we cannot personally rise to, because this is a working program. We don't come here to be broken down. We come here to be built up. And deterioration happens naturally. Building happens on purpose. And it doesn't matter if you're building a business practice, a house, or a human being. Building happens on purpose. It's deliberate, and it takes refinement, and it takes definement, and it takes a willingness to change things. Deterioration will happen anyway. We all sit still for a while, we will deteriorate. We don't fix, clean, and maintain buildings, they will deteriorate. Deterioration happens naturally. That's entropy. It goes to the lowest state of its being. So do we. So if we want to build, we have to take responsibility for what needs changing. We have to rise to the occasion and say, okay, this place isn't clean around me. I don't feel clean enough. I don't feel dressed enough. I don't feel like my head is clear enough. I need to unclutter that. There's too much going on in there that's telling me things that does not support me. There's too many beliefs I have that hold me back. I believe that people have the right to treat me like that, and then I feel like a victim. But you're giving that power to people. One of the most powerful lines that I find has value is to have this line start going in your head. And if it goes in your head for 40 years before you ever say it once to a person, you are better off than never using it at all. I don't give you permission to speak to me like that. In your head, just hear that. I don't give you permission. You know, I had this interaction with someone years
ago.
Can't
you say it out aloud?
Of course you should. But many people don't have the courage to because they're scared the relationship will change or deteriorate or break down. If they put up a barrier that says, I don't give you permission to speak to me like that. One of the first reprisals, and I can tell you, you can write this down, will be, I don't need your permission. And your immediate response is, you absolutely do need my permission. Because if you keep speaking like this, we're not even having a conversation. Because you are speaking in this way that I do not wish to engage with, and I'm therefore shutting down.
Mm.
And if you want to engage with me, I cannot give you permission to speak to me like this. I had a boss who did this with me once. I messed up so badly. I was meant to, as an optometrist, doing a corporate optometry thing, had 27 jobs or something ridiculous to write up before I went home. But my three-year-old was waiting, and I really wanted to get home to him. And the receptionist said, you've written them up, I'll phone and order them through. Thank you, say I leave. And the next day, guess what? She got busy, got distracted, and forgot. So when I finished that day, I got a phone call from him that said, be at this practice at this time and wait for me. Oh. So I go there and I wait. And as I arrived there, she said to me, Bev, I'm so sorry, I forgot to order them. When he arrived this morning, they weren't ordered. It was your responsibility. I said I'd do it. I said to her, please don't worry. It was my responsibility. I will manage it. So in he comes. I asked her, had they been ordered? They had, so I didn't have to do that. In he comes, and all it is a barrage of swear words and insults and who do you. But I was managing a business that was making millions for him. So it wasn't like I was doing nothing effective. I made an error. And so I said to him, hold on a second. I made a mistake, and I'm so sorry. It will never happen again. I was a rush. And I meant to do it, and it didn't happen, and I'm so sorry. It's no one else's responsibility, and she should never have taken on. I should never have let her. I totally own that. I am so sorry. Please forgive me. It will never happen again. But that didn't stop him. He carried on screaming and shouting, and I looked at him, and I said to him, I do not give you permission to speak to me like that.
And how did he respond?
I don't need your permission. And there were a few expletives in there, and I said, no, you absolutely do, because on my forehead there is not slave written. On my forehead, there is not owned by you written. I work for myself and I contract my time to you, and you give me an RP5 to prove it. So I'm contracting myself to you. You're paying my tax for me, and I can contract myself anywhere. So I don't give you permission to think that you have the right to speak to me like that. I made an error. I was wrong. I own it. It won't happen again. We need to move on from this. But if you keep talking to me like this, we're no longer in a conversation because I'm no longer listening. And he carried on shouting.
My goodness.
And I said it again. I don't give you permission to engage with me like this. Please stop it. And he said to me, I can't talk to you. And he walked out. Of course he can't, because he wouldn't talk to me. He wanted to swear and scream at me. I didn't lose my job. I left it to go and start my own business a few months later. And he asked me to stay. There was no, you're going to lose your job over this. It just set everything back. 27 jobs need to get done. So I'm talking about taking responsibility. I'm talking about owning. And part of what we have to take responsibility for is how we allow others to engage with us, because you're not disempowered. You're not a victim of conversation.
There we go, Barbara. I'm sure you're going to take a lot of what Bev has said and really think about it and hopefully be able to apply it in small ways.